Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and like the lady said, welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Allen, and welcome to you and others to the richest state in the United States with regards to corporations and big business and et cetera. A lot of discussion going on, a little bit of shock, I guess, on the part of some people, the kind of positive profit and revenue being brought in by Minnesota companies. I think you said at the development and preparation meeting that there's no way in the world that everybody in the state of Minnesota who wants to be should not be employed, including people of color, Native Americans, blacks, making an average of at least $18 an hour or better. That's our estimate by our staff here in the last 20 minutes as we've been analyzing this. So good research, Don. Boy, I'm telling you, a lot of money in this state, but there's not a lot of revenue going to the African-American community. And Don, you have some theory on that. Why don't you kind of walk us through it, man? Yeah.
Well, it's really strange because when I saw this article in the Star Tribune that was headlined that Minnesota's top 50 public companies ranked by revenue was hitting number one with $226 billion. That's a lot of money. That's a ton of cash. And if you look at the report, the top 50, I mean, you have Health Partners, United Health Group, at $226 million in revenue, might as well say $227 million in revenue to get rid of the change, with total assets of $152 million and market capitalization of $226 million. And if you look down, you know, number two is Target, three is Best Buy, four is 3M, five is Medtronic, U.S. Bank is six, and C.H. Robinson. Worldwide, a logistics company, providers for freight, transportation, you know, you got to move things around. They're number seven they're at $16 million. But check this out, Mr. Edwards. C.H. Robinson
This is all
worldwide.
Profit, right, Don? This is all profit?
What I'm going to tell you now is profit number for C.H. Robinson Worldwide, the third, the largest third-party logistics provider. It coordinates freight, transportation, and logistics service to help solve supply chain issues. That's a key word, supply chain issues. Mm-hmm. In profit, $666 million. Mm-hmm. That's good. Amazing. That's like amazing. And you look at that.
And what a couple of those companies, this is a silly moment I'm having here. So a couple of these companies have African Americans as CEOs and CFOs, is that right? How many of them have color?
I have no idea. I mean, it's not broken down like that. I mean, I can go in individually.
I can already tell you, Don, because I subscribe to Fortune 0, 0, 0, none.
Wow. That's not good. That's not a good thing. And I'm looking at this, like Hormel Foods, $940 million in profit. Let's go up here. Let me go back. General Mills is in the billions. You have all these different organizations doing very, very well. And again, it gets back to the point you made earlier. There's really no reason for unemployment, homelessness, and even carlessness in Minnesota, especially a state with a winter. And you wonder, how do we make the connection to make a pipeline? Because we're always talking, Mr. Edwards, about the pipeline to prison and schools, you know? when are we going to start talking about the pipeline to employment, you know, in the community? That seems the more rational. Go ahead.
Yeah, but let's do this also, Don, because we talked about it in production meetings and et cetera. We really also need to talk about the brain drain in the black community. See, black folks don't like to talk about that because too many of them talk in terms that this is paradise, which it's not. What about the brain drain? And that's something we're going to be concentrating on and giving people, you know, heads up notification. the brain drain of the bright, quote-unquote, of the colored minds, if you will, the blacks, if you will, here in Minnesota. Now, we're losing a lot of people. Here we have in the paper just a couple of days ago that the outstanding and creative genius of economic development, Gary Cunningham, the husband of the one-term mayor in the city of Minneapolis, Betsy Hodges, Mr. Cunningham accepting a position in Washington, D.C. with a entity out there. Geez, we've lost Roxanne Gibbons. We lost Jeffrey Hassan, if you will. We've got Louis King and others who, you know, have been talking in terms of at the right point in time. Profit moving on, if you will, Louis, to Jacksonville, Florida, and Atlanta, Georgia, where he has multiple operations and et cetera. So why are we having this brain drain amongst these African-American legends, if you will, and we have so little to show? But you've been talking about it for a couple of years, Don. In fact, they maintain that you created toxicity with your ramblings and et cetera, joined by your colleague, yours truly.
Yes, sir.
But at what point do we become concerned that there is a doctrine within the brain drain African-American community that you rip off the nickels and dimes, and then you get the heck on out of here? I mean, what the heck is going on here?
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, you know, we had talked about this a little yesterday in the production meeting and this morning, and I do have a theory, and, you know, this is my theory. What I think is that I remember, and we're going to deal with Mr. Cunningham specifically because I know the history very well. Meta, located downtown Minneapolis at the time at 250 2nd Street, on the corner of Washington and 2nd in the Crossings building on the first floor, suite 210, and my office was next door. I remember a lady by the name of Yvonne Chung Ho, who was the president of MITA for many years. She actually is the one responsible for launching it to the point where if you were a black business, you could go to MITA and get a grant to do your website, get a grant to get things rolling from construction to mom and pop stores. Yvonne Chung Ho, Miss Yvonne Chung Ho, it might be Dr. Yvonne Chung Ho, had this system set in place. Now, she would also give out business loans. I mean, not no little pennies, nickels, and dimes. I'm talking about hundreds
like
of thousands
Dorothy
of dollars.
Griffith, formerly,
yeah.
Dorothy, let's lay it right out here in a structured way. Dorothy okay. Bridges, a former president of Sunrise and now a governor of the Federal Reserve, who was taken to the cleaners by a lot of, quote-unquote, our great minds. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. You'll go right
ahead. Yeah, well, Yvonne Chung Ho would she was the kind of type of business person that, you know, they would give out loans to different businesses, many loans. And she was so business savvy that if you understand anything about the loan business, you can sell your loans for cash to be more liquid and have more money, you know, cash flow in your system. Now, you might lose a little, but not that much. The bottom line is having that free cash. And they would sell these loans to different companies that are out there that actually buys and collects, and that's how they make their money. But when Gary Cunningham took over MITA, I don't think he was intellectually he was not intellectually prepared, proficient, or ready to deal with all those micros. Yeah, inside of MITA, as far as I was concerned. So, you know, his wife was the mayor. It was a good look for the city of Minneapolis. And it was, to me, my theory, nothing more than, you know, a PR kind of thing. Now, yeah, he went to college. He had some experience, you know, in leadership, being at the Northwest Area Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. But this is this is kind of a different ball game with this finance, and I don't think he met the level or standard of expectations, but
I have to disagree with you, Mr. Allen, and state this, because these are facts, is that one of the reasons that he had to move on from the Northwest Area Foundation, where he was the number two person behind Mr. Lewis, a Caucasian gentleman who was brought here from Flint, Michigan, to take over the very powerful, powerful Northwest Area Foundation, formerly the Great Northern Foundation, was that he was making a lot of loans. Remember the organization called the African American Leadership Forum? Remember that group there, Don?
Absolutely. Absolutely, sir.
And what happened was there became a problem with regards to money being handed out to friends and associates and et cetera to take care of a multiplicity of things that they were involved in, if you will, everything from, you know, buying new cars to, in some cases, buying drugs. I mean, and dope, you know. And we'll need to touch on that because some of our crime fighters here in the Twin Cities are in trouble. But anyways, back to Gary, little Gary, as we would refer to him, is that the foundation's letting go. In fact, there was a meeting for anyone that desires to challenge us on this. There was a meeting in about the board of Northwest Area Foundation in Portland, Oregon, at a specific time. We have all of the documentations, and my associates have all the documentation of that particular meeting, because what happened was our just newly elected mayor, Betsy Hodges, flew out to Portland to appeal to the board not to terminate the services of Mr. Cunningham. They cut a deal, and it's interesting that you've done the research, because the Asian lady that you made reference to, if I'm not mistaken, is a South Korean, excellent mind, well respected, as was Dorothy Bridges, formerly of Sunrise, now the Federal Reserve, Bill. And they cut a deal and gave Ms. Chung a beautiful golden parachute in order to not to preserve or save Mr. Cunningham, but to save the reputation of his newly elected wife as mayor of the city of Minneapolis. Now, this is well known in the white business circles, and it's one of the reasons why I have my theory on why there's been such silence from the powerful, powerful white corporate community in Minnesota with regards to, oh, Lord have mercy, we're not supposed to talk about this, the collapse and the fold-up as the Minneapolis Star Tribune and Neil St. Anthony. We're giving documentation here. We're not talking in quote-unquote some conversation at a bar somewhere. And as Neil St. Anthony pointed out, and we probably should have had that inflated on the air, the expert from Washington, D.C., who appeared on this program twice in a year and a half period of time, who did all the research on Thor construction, a former United States congressman, if you will, things like that, and $31 million that never could be accounted for by Thor as it pertains to a contract that it had with regards to billing. Initially, remember, Mr. Allen, it was going to be 15,000 homes for the little black Haitian in black Haiti. But then it dropped down to 1,500. Then it became basically zero, and that zero figure is an interesting one. So what you've just said, and you have put in play the name of the lady that graciously, notice the word I use, Mr. Allen, graciously stepped aside to allow Gary Cunningham, who had to take a $100,000 salary cut, as I understand it, but who was given the position because they did not politically want to embarrass the new incoming white female mayor. Pure and simple. People know mm-hmm. that. I repeat again what I just said. It's one of the reasons that you've not seen white corporate Minnesota say much about the collapse of poor construction.
Wow. See, and that's very interesting. If you recall, Mr. Edwards, when this information about Thor Construction troubles or challenges first came out, they tried to spin it as if Mr. Cunningham was this brain trust that would relearn how to recalculate, refinance, and restructure the company back to success in a very short time. And anybody, including our listeners, that knows anything about businesses, especially ones that make over $1 million, if you have a deficit of that much and other companies, your partners are stepping in and paying your bills into the million, you know, your headstone is already carved with the beginning and the end date on it. There's really no way to turn that out without a cash infusion of, in this case, of a minimum of $250 million. And I didn't
That's absolutely correct, Mr. Allen. That's absolutely correct.
And I didn't see Mr. Cunningham as the type of business person that could go to the private sector and gain new partners and draw $250 million and insert it into
the
door.
But Don, his associates and others were, in fact, they were being very critical of us, calling us toxic with regards to our continued investigative reporting, just like the Star Tribune. Now, of course, they didn't attack Neil St. Anthony and the Star Tribune and et cetera with regards to the stories. In fact, I give you two specific dates and circumstances. Star Tribune runs a story on a Thursday indicating that Thor Construction is in trouble. Mr. Cunningham and others are quoted in that article that this is just a bump in the road. Everything is under control. Mr. Cunningham is the great genius. And in fact, at that particular time, one of the members who quickly disappeared was in a Robbie Norman. Mr. Robbie Norman was in the process of working with a Dr. Massey, kept using the term Dr. Massey. And we talked in the production meeting, who in the heck was Mr. Massey? We went to the computers and et cetera. Then on the Saturday, 2 days later, there was the article which indicated that Robbie Norman had left, had bailed out, that he had dusted off a corporation allegedly under his control in auspices called Global, and that he was going to be involved with the Upper Mississippi River development right there in the vicinity of the former Riverview Supper Club. Okay, remember we had on that. Again, for clarification, if you will, authenticity and et cetera, Neil St. Anthony, chief writer, financial writer, economic writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, wrote that specific article, if you will. Now, we raised some questions. There was an attempted counter movement. In fact, we are aware, Mr. Allen and I, you know, are aware of a meeting that took place at a private home in South Minneapolis in which the well-known attorney came in, was clarifying, was talking in terms that we specifically were in error, didn't know what we were talking about, and et cetera, until somebody in that meeting, it was 14 individuals in that meeting in a hall in South Minneapolis, in a luxury, you know, basement recreation room. And what specifically came out was the question about ownership. Remember how we talked about the ownership, who really owns that building that sits empty now on Plymouth and Penn Avenue, though people try to say that there are things going on. Yeah, what's going on is that is now the Northside facility of the Hennepin County Department of Corrections. That's where Negroes are taken and processed and then put in the van back there in the back facing the UROC and taken on down to the county jail. I mean, we're just being so dishonest with regards to what is happening. And it's caused us this morning to have to take a look at the brain drain, because all of these people, I mean, Mr. Copeland's lovely wife left here with $3 million and unaccounted for dollars for the, you remember the, we were going to have, I'm not talking about the little room that they put in at the building for construction on Plymouth Avenue. I'm talking about the big foundation that we were going to have that was located in a historical house right there behind the convention center. Remember that? Remember how that they had a party out there?
Oh, I remember. I spent many couple days in the what we call it, the stable that was remodeled into a huge, beautiful, elegant office. With a bedroom upstairs, stove, kitchen, Mr. Edwards, a family of four could have lived there comfortably.
This was the stable house that was separate.
It was just
the
stable
house.
The main house where the museum is.
Horses. Yeah.
And they kind of still did. But anyway. Anyway. Mr. Evans, we have like callers holding that have been holding for up to 16 minutes, and I would like to give them the opportunity.
Let's see what kind of questions they have. By the way, we're also going to have to take a look, unfortunately, at the allegations against Mad Dads, a crime fighting organization. So we'll be talking about that probably in the second half hour. So we're just giving everybody a heads up. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Get the callers in.
Okay, here we go. A caller, 1924, you're live on the air. Do you have a question or comment? Hello, caller. I guess they just want to listen. We'll let them listen. And we have our weekly Q listener there. And, sir, I'd like to tell you, if you want to make a comment, please hang up and call back, and I will get to you. Otherwise, I will just leave you there. And this looks like a friend of the show. This might be Mr. M. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. Good morning. To hear all these bombshells, sometimes, you know, I had to have an extra cup of coffee here as I'm listening to these bombshells that we never really hear anything from in the newspaper. I mean, what I always hear, you know, about the Ron and Don show is Ron says, you know, that they're toxic, that they're divisive. But that, my feeling is that the Ron and Don show is the only way that you're going to find out the inner workings, what goes on behind the scenes. And it's real interesting, the demise of, well, I don't know if it's a demise, because it looks like he got a golden parachute, Mr. Cunningham. Looks like he was able to exit stage right and, land on his feet because of the inner workings, the things that we just don't see in the community that we can only hear here. And so who is actually, is the upper, one question I do have, though, is the Upper Mississippi Project, is this still on the table?
I'm not sure for this reason. The only community newspaper that had the last piece of information on it, and that was a publication around the 14th or 15th of April, is the Camden News, which is a white-owned and controlled community newspaper. They ran a story right around the 12th of April in which they indicated that everything was moving on. But later we reported here on the Ron and Don program that a stop action had been taken and that the Minneapolis City Council, under the leadership of Vice President Jenkins, had directed the planning department and other entities of Minneapolis city government to bring back a verification report with regards to how the finances were going to be handled, and it particularly had to do with Mr. Norman, Robert Norman, who had positioned himself as having a new corporation. In fact, I don't know if you're aware of this. I think Don caught that program. I listened to it in its entirety when civil rights activist Josie Johnson, who has, you know, been involved in the community for a long time, called a urban affairs program at KMOJ and blasted Robbie Norman over the air for his betrayal of Richard Copeland. Now, that was a signal to a lot of people that there was really something wrong and going on. Mr. M, I again repeat the conversation on a Sunday about five weeks ago, in which Josie Johnson, who was close, and in fact she talked in terms of how she had known Richard Copeland since he was a little guy, if you will, and how Robbie Norman needed to explain why he abandoned Richard Copeland and then reminded him that he was the chief financial officer, if you will, CFO, as it's called, of Thor, and how this happened. It was a very tense conversation over the air at that time. Now, a lot of people recorded that conversation on that Urban Affairs program on that particular Sunday, if you will. This all ties in to later on, the Star Tribune, you know, the folks, white folks, you know, the black folks love the Star Tribune. Nobody challenges the Star Tribune. Wrote a story in which the headline was, Thor Construction Folds. Remember that, gentlemen? That wasn't that long ago. It's just like we have to go back into the history of the dinosaur. And so we saw this coming. Now, let me just say this to you, Em, on this, that is really very interesting because documentation is there. I kind of wondered why in that Saturday edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, again written by Neil St. Anthony, why Mr. Cunningham went to such great lengths to talk in terms of the things that he was going to do. You know, initially, just minutes ago, I talked in terms of Mr. Norman kept talking about Dr. Massey, and we couldn't figure out who Dr. Massey was, and then through the efforts and the talents of Mr. Allen, we found out that there is a big company that helps you with liquidation called, and Mr. Allen is on his computer right now, called Manchester. And Manchester is a big white American company, as I said just seconds ago, that deals with liquidation and et cetera. And the Star Tribune reported how Manchester was being identified by Gary Cunningham as a company that was going to come in. Well, what I realize now, after talking with associates and even talking to the Star Tribune, Gary Cunningham, Gary, I got to hand it to you, buddy. You did a heck of a thing. You did a smooth thing. Mr. Cunningham is on the board of the corporation that he is getting ready to head up. And you know what he was doing in those quotes at the Minneapolis Star Tribune? He was auditioning for his position. And the documentation is clearly there. He was auditioning for his board members who were preparing and were vetting him to take over leadership of the company. And Mr. Allen has at his computer some information on this entity, this company, in Washington, D.C. Mr. Cunningham did a heck of a thing. It was shrewd. And that was, he was auditioning for the job through the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Now, if we had that kind of imagination to help out black folks, as Mr. Allen just previously pointed out, receive the kind of assets and et cetera so important to help a community pull itself up, quote unquote, by its bootstraps, we'd probably be in better shape. And I lay it out to you, the documentation is there. That was a shrewd, shrewd move by a little guy to make himself more attractive to his, at that time, board colleagues who were getting ready to offer the position as head of the corporation that he now is heading up, according to all of the news sources, including sources in Washington, D.C.
Stunning. So, but I guess a follow-up question would be then, what happens to the great Mita now? What happens to Mita? I mean,
well,
the guru
will go through, I guess,
of coming to the rescue.
Man, you know, one of the things that normally happens when an executive moves on to greater things is that you normally indicate the board of directors of Mita. Ooh, you raised a tough question. Would normally go through the process of auditing, clarifying, justifying, and certifying the great things that they've done, so that whoever the new person is, he or she, coming in, will be in a situation to hit the ground running. I think that's a wonderful question, Mr. M, that you've just asked. What's Mita going to do? Because Mr. Allen clearly has some information there at his computer at his desk, which clearly indicates that when Mr. Cunningham came in, Nita was doing some fairly aggressive and wonderful things for communities of color. Is that still in place?
Mr. Edwards, I don't know,
because I haven't seen the last audit that was done, independent audit now.
And let me, can I interject something here?
Go right ahead, we
have to connect the dots. I'm glad M is on, and other caller, we'll get to you in a second here. I just want to run through this. I'm on the MEDA board of directors, and I just need to connect the dots here for everyone here. We have Barbara Butts Williams, who's the chair of the board. You have Maria Ritten, who's a Top Scale Strategies is her company. She's the principal. You have, of course, Gary Cunningham, who's the president, outgoing. And then you have Hoy Cecil, I think it is. He's the president of Shaw Lundquist Associates. Craig Vernick, John Stout. Okay, those are the board officers. And I'm looking down here through the board members. And we have Robbie Norman, chief executive officer of Norman Global Enterprises. And I'm going to keep going here, and I'm going to read off some names that you might or might not know. And that would be the only name that you know. Now I go down here and I look at their advisory board. Their advisory board consists of six Caucasian, five males and one female. Is their advisory board holding positions at General Mills, Make-A-Wish Foundation, Bremer Bank, Wells Fargo, XL Energy, Key Investment, General Mills, if I didn't say that already. And I'm just looking at this and I'm going like, okay, they have a majority of movers and shakers. But then again, I'm looking more a little bit more
Let me cut
focused.
In. I want to cut in because there's questions that have to be asked. Who is the general counsel? And I think it's good on your part, Mr. Allen, that you self-reported that you – let me be clear. You are a sitting member of NEDA's board?
He is actually, yes, a board member.
I thought you said that you were also a board member.
Oh, no, I never said that. I am not a board member. I don't have
we misspoke
then.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, what I was saying
is Leon Trawick, is he on the board or is he general counsel of NEDA? Is his name there?
I do not. I see an advisory.
The reason I asked
here.
The question, and this is for M and any callers that call in, I talked about a meeting at a home in South Minneapolis where it was being explained that tax were unfairly being made on NEDA and others. And there was an attorney of record there, and that was my good friend, Leon Trawick, reporting and updating until the question got asked, who owned the building that sits on Plymouth Avenue and Penn, if you will. And it was made clear that it actually is owned by the city of Minneapolis and, more importantly, by the bank, if you will. But Sunrise, if I'm not mistaken. Robbie Norman and Mr. Allen had not even indicated to me that he had the list of the names, but you earlier, M, heard me identify Global as the new company that Mr. Norman said that he had that had actually been under his custody and control, and he was dusting off, which led to the attack and questioning of him, the interrogation by Josie Johnson on a Urban Affairs radio program emanating from the north side of Minneapolis.
Well, these are developments.
You're still with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I am still here. These developments, like I say, I don't want to have a third cup of coffee as I try to digest these events. Now, where is Mr. Copeland in all of this? I mean, is he still, I know he's gone back and forth to Vegas and the Twin Cities. You know, it looks like he's just walked away from the company. I mean, there's a company. The company, I know they've had work. They've had a lot of jobs over the years with Target. They had a relationship. And so I kind of would like to, explore that.
What's the term that we use in corporate America? He's trying to reboot himself. Reboot.
mean, and I'm trying not to read really books. Shade. I mean, I grew up with Mr. Copeland. I mean, I know the family.
Yes, I know.
I mean, all of, you know, and it's really stunning to see how, you know, the people like the Harry Davis.
Well, by the way, M.N., that we have you there, and you're self-declaring also. What was the name of the little corporation there that sat there on, what was it, Portland or Park? The little company, the construction company that he first really opened a number of years ago. There was a gentleman with him who was supposed to be his partner, and some things happened. And didn't that gentleman wind up going to jail for a period of time?
I believe so.
That's right. And I don't want to, you know, unnecessarily put pressure or slander anyone. But this has been a bombshell with regards to Mr. Cunningham bailing out. And back to your specific question, and then, you know, we don't want to get any other callers in. I don't know what the future of the company that he previously, or the entity, the non-profit, that is a non-profit, right, Mr. Allen?
What? No, it's not. Thor's company, I mean.
No, not Thor. No, Thor's gone. Thor's dead. I mean, yeah, we've already had the film. No, I'm talking in terms of the company, the entity that Mr. Cunningham is leaving for the great promotion in Washington, D.C. And by the way,
no,
I think you have that. What is the name of the corporation?
Oh, here, just
in
Washington, D.C. Let me pull it back up because I have it right here. They're having a celebration on June 3rd at the Ordway for Gary Cunningham, who is leaving for the company Prosperity Now in Washington, D.C. And Prosperity Now, let me just go, our approach, we'll do that, is a, it talks about 50 million people making the pathway to prosperity. Now, this is the same model that Scott Gray tried to pull off in the Urban League.
You took the word right out of my mouth, because that was his theme,
yes.
Wasn't it, pathway?
That was his theme, and basically this company, you know, they have some facts on the website, like it would take black families 228 years and Latino families 84 years to amass the same amount of wealth that white families have today. And so I'm looking at that one single point on the website. I don't think there's black families that can live for 228 years. And
not
secondly,
not on this planet,
yeah, maybe on planet Mule,
universe, a parallel universe,
yeah.
Yes,
right. And so I'm looking at this and I'm going like, wow, and they seem like they're committed, but you know, Mr. Edwards, as you know, commitment without currency is counterfeit, and so you look at this stuff and you try to figure out, really, what are these big nonprofits trying to do? Because you can't tell me that. You know, if you're making $150,000 a year at this company or even more, I think it'd be hard-pressed for you to go to the community and lift someone up for that many years till they get to that point. One of the main problems is in nonprofits is that they have to stay open. And the littlest they do, the more funding they get. And so they're not trying to create a bunch of wealth. Going back to that first article that Minnesota had all these companies with this huge profit margin, and then we're doing so bad here, you know, in different communities, and are they separated with the distance between haves and have nots are ridiculous. So getting back to Gary Cunningham's piece here, this Prosperity Now, I mean, it might be a good company, it might be or might not be a good company. I don't think these models are working on the benefit or the behalf of the lower one-third of the community, like the Urban League, like the NAACP, like these other places. And, Ms. Edwards, you know this history. Urban League was never created to serve the lower one-third of the community. They were created to serve the black middle class so that they could uplift and make sure that the rest of the folks, you know, business started and people were hired and we kind of police our own. But, you know, they changed the regulations and, you know, you could only get funding. You know, you can't get funding
because
for
the original name of the Urban League was the Industrial League, and it changed sometime around 1927, 1928. We want to get through some other calls, but, you know, hang on if you maybe have any questions.
Oh, I will hang on. I just want to bring one more comment. I'm actually looking at the Prosperity Now site, and they're already featuring prominently Gary Cunningham as the incoming president. So it looks like this has been in the works for some time. And he's featured very prominently. It says, "Get to know Gary Cunningham, our incoming president."
What did I say to you earlier, about 20-some minutes ago, that Gary did a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, as it pertains to, you know, the shuck and jab and jamming. When he auditioned for the board, with the board, for the position, by being quoted as he was in the Minneapolis Star Tribune article of the Saturday edition following Thursday expose, in which he was auditioning. Gentlemen, I mean, let's be just up front. He was auditioning, if you will. When he started talking about Manchester as an example, and talked in terms of the great things he was going to, we would encourage anybody to go back, take a look at the Saturday edition following the Thursday edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune when the announcement was made that Thorax/Construction was in big trouble. That was a beautiful move by Gary. He was auditioning, you know.
Yes.
And his friends and buddies and supporters on the board there at the corporation, the entity that Mr. Allen has just identified, were saying, well, wow, Gary, you're one powerful guy. This is the same guy that made the statement that we had to correct, that he was a member of the Black Panthers in 1968, which would have been great. Only problem is he was only about 8 years old. But anyways, gentlemen, Jim, I want to thank you. You know, we want to move on. Okay.
All right, thank you. And we have another caller. Caller 4013, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Larry Tucker, good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to make
a statement,
that there is an enterprise zone. It's called Opportunity Zone. They just changed the name of it. It is alive and well. So there is a so-called enterprise zone or opportunity zone. I think your discussion is spot on. What you have in our community, you have people who want to be social workers. And I don't want to talk about jobs. I want to talk about contracts. I got a significant contract from the state of Minnesota several years ago. And I did that through a lot of wrangling with a lot of people. So I think there's opportunities out there. And I think that we're not taking advantage of them. And it's not them, it's us. But I had people in the legislature would call me up and say, we got a contract here that's something you might be interested in. I don't hear that from the existing politicians. So I think that it ain't them, it's us. It ain't them, it's us. And I think we keep pointing fingers at what others aren't doing, what other cultures ain't doing. Other cultures are helping people from their own culture. We don't tend to provide any kind of assistance from people from our own culture. I also like to mention that you have this brown-eyed, blue-eyed study that was done in 1968, and people listening need to go on the internet and look at the brown-eyed, blue-eyed study. And I think what we have in Minnesota, per se, is a lot of brown-eyed people want to be treated like blue-eyed people without anything to undergird you, without any foundation or any basis. Gentlemen, I thought your program this morning was excellent, and you're spot on. Have a good day.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, well, you know, these are people that know and understand. Let me do this, Mr. Allen, because we are under a request to explain why crime fighters are caught up in the situation. It has to do with the terrible and serious allegations and arrests that were made in regards to Mad Dad. And
You've
got, I think, it on there on your computer there, Don. I have it on mine. I'm not sure what the heck is going to happen to the future of Mad Dad. Word is that its contract with the state of Minnesota and the transit. Well, which, by the way, that's interesting because they report to the Met Council. Oh, by the way, we'll have a vacancy on the Met Council, and so I imagine that some of our new emerging leaders are already put their names in to succeed Mr. Cunningham as a member of the board of the Met Council. Okay, so there's a vacancy there. So he can, you know, but back to the Mad Dads, it appears that they're going to lose their contract with the state of Minnesota to provide security. And I'm just trying to get a feel of what the heck happened, how all of this drug and gun activity took place, and why, you know, again, leadership wasn't on top of it. You have any thoughts,
yeah,
Tom?
Yeah, this is very interesting because, you know, as reported here many years ago, there were rumors and allegations of different things going on that were surreptitious, to say the best, and are at best, and people were a little concerned. And we know that Mad Dads is a reactive operation and that they show up at different murder scenes and stabbings, et cetera, beatings, et cetera. And I find it very peculiar that, you know, they were let to run like this, or that segment of inside of Mad Dad to run, because, you know, we go by the theory here that if a 9-year-old knows who the drug dealer is in the community, what makes you think the police don't? So,
wow.
It's very interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting. And we're just looking at it, and it was, I think it was scheduled, it was timed, it was planned, because there are some ugliness. And when you trash people and get caught up or do people wrong, they talk. And so this started a whisper campaign. I just think the timing was right. But, you know, this is not really good. This gives us another black eye in the black community. And so it's very interesting. Very interesting, Mr. Edwards. And disturbing at the same time. That's the irony of it. It's just,
yes, well, I'm
why?
Expecting that we should be hearing a more definitive our explanation from the leadership of Mad Dads, if you will. I mean, we really need to hear that, because what you just said seconds ago is spot on, if you will. It makes it appear that everything that we say that we are about as it pertains to the protection and of the African-American community and doing the right thing is just a sham. Folks are just, you know, playing a game and et cetera. I mean, so the information that is coming back, and I understand that Mr. Smith's computer and et cetera has gone dark. I don't understand what's happening. I was hoping for a press conference. But then we have another situation which I'm trying to get a feel for. And this, you know, deals with criminal activity also, and that is arson. I mean, what's the latest update? Because I'm confused. The young lady that was in the picture with the young man that initially was identified by Dr. Louis King as an arsonist and a Somali, she turned herself in, was questioned by the police, and let go. We are now being told that the young man is the arsonist, okay? And I'm trying to figure out, well, why has he not been apprehended? Now, maybe I missed something because I haven't seen this morning's paper. Was there an article in the paper this morning or anything, Don, that the gentleman, the young man in question, had been apprehended and taken into custody?
No, there's nothing of that sort in here at all whatsoever, Mr. Edwards. Nothing that I can see, nothing lately in the last 20 minutes. So, no. The answer is no.
Okay.
Nothing.
So we have these situations in which there are questions about what the heck is going on. By the way, moving around quickly, because we're down to 12 minutes, 11 minutes, I found it also peculiar that we've not heard a clear declaration by the president of the board of the park board or from the executive director, who is also an African-American. Something was said by the media that, now, by the way, that doesn't mean that the white fourth estate is right all the time, because we know they're wrong a lot of times, is that a statement was made that as it pertains to the rebuilding. Because I don't know that, that Mr. King has $18, $19 million to rebuild a structure to house the park board's operation of selling food. Would you not agree?
I would agree. I would have to agree.
And so I just think that, you know, we have some African-Americans on the park board who talked in terms of, you know, the many great things they were going to do. Is there some reason, what is your assessment in your mind as a member of our community? I mean, why is it that the park board per se was so has been so quiet in supporting Mr. King and the investigation? Because I'm hearing from law enforcement authorities that there's really not a lot of pressure on them to apprehend anybody. It's just pressure now to change the narrative, if you know what I mean. Because the initial statements that were made is that the perpetrators were Somali. They were the two young people shown in the video. One surrendered to the police, and turned herself in, was questioned, I repeat again, some level of redundancy, but that she was released. Now, what happened to the young man? Where is the arsonist?
Yeah, and you know what? That's a question, Mr. Edwards, that I even sent over to Kyle Severson, who's the commissioner for District 2 of the Park Board, who happens to be a friend of mine on social media and in person. And I have not gotten a response. And then, you know, you have a couple other commissioners on there, and they're not really letting us know what's happening or what the what their vision is for that area. It's very quiet, as you say. The silence is what's doing the damage because, like you said, no one's been apprehended. This guy has not been talked to that we know of. And the building is torn down, I guess, from what people have told me. I've been getting there lately. And so with that said, I mean, is this an insurance payoff? Was this set up for the beginning, or are people being silenced, you know, with incentives and cash that need to come forward and explain how this building burnt the way it did and who said it? So, yeah, there's a lot of there's more unanswered questions than answered questions, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, we do have, it looks like, a couple more callers when you get a chance.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead. Yeah, let's get them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we have a little time left here, 7 minutes. Caller 9011, what's your comment or question? Okay,
hello?
We just want to be in the queue.
Hello?
Yes, hello. You're live.
I guess I forgot my number. This is Paula Overby. Called in to listen to the show. Hey, I'm doing great. Things are moving along. Still organizing. I just wanted to listen to the show, and for some reason the audio cut out on my browser, so I don't really have a question. I was really looking for an update on the Mad Dad incident, so thanks so much.
Mad Dad,
keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm. Put you back in the queue. Okay, there we go. You're back in the queue, Ms. Overby, and so you stay there. And I know the other callers here are listening. We have one more here. Caller 1924, do you have a comment or question, or do you want to be in the queue? Okay, they're going to be in the queue.
All right,
Terrence Edwards, I just wanted to check those out.
Yes. Well,
okay,
let me just complete
it.
Because we have so many, it's kind of like what the police always say. We have so many cold cases. And the community deserves better. Our community, the African-American community, and then the so-called broader community deserves better, if you will, because initially, allegations were made. On the other hand, with regards to Mad Dad, there had been great trust as well as financial incentives provided to them, and et cetera. They had just received a contract there with the Transit Authority Police. By extension, that's the Met Council, if you will, the big contract to be on the trains, and now allegations are being made by both state and federal authorities. The raid was carried out, by the way, by the Sheriff's Department, which was interesting. Now you're hearing statements being made of operations of drug sales and et cetera at the transit facility in Brooklyn Center, if you will. Purchases and exchange of drugs and monies on the light rail and et cetera. And I would just think that, you know, people would want to clarify but it amazes me that people who, you know, like to talk, all of a sudden everybody just got silent, be it the arson, if you will, be it the organized crime operation that is taking place within our city and on the transit lines and et cetera. And the only thing that you get is that, you know, the deliverers of the news and information are toxic. I just don't understand it, Mr. Allen. It really is a little bit beyond me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know it's all part of the game. Yeah. I know it's all a part of the game. But hopefully we'll be able to hear some clarity, particularly on those two situations, Mad Dad and the arson issue, because those were some hard-hitting allegations. If somebody has to kind of defend the Somali community, then that's what the Don and Ron program is here to do, at least to bring the question. Those were some hard-hitting allegations, and when the pictures were made public, if you will, it was a serious indictment of, quote-unquote, the Somali community, and this is a community that has really been under siege since the end of the Mohammed Noor trial. By the way, congratulations to his attorneys for, you know, standing up and talking in terms that there has not been the necessary validation or proof that Mr. Noor or former Officer Noor should be incarcerated. By the way, he is still in the maximum security facility at Oak Park Heights, where he has been since the 30th of April. Nobody talks about that, Don, but the Ron and Don program. Nobody talks about it. No one said a word. So, anything else, Don, we got? Because there's so much on the platter here, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, is there any kind of functional things going on inside of the four construction building there on Plymouth? And
I will venture over there next week. I don't know what's going on over there, but I would like to see, just to see if the doors are even open and to see what the movement is in the building, you know, while trying to look professional and not snoopy. But, yeah, I'm very interested. You know, Ms. Edwards, there's like you said, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we got to figure out how we connect the dots, because it's really strange. And we're having no one's talking about this. There's no press conferences scheduled to talk about any of this, and people aren't looking at the data. I was enlightened yesterday when I had a meeting with two other colleagues, and we were talking about the youth of color in the United States as well as the Twin Cities. And it's really funny because the youth of color are outnumbering the mainstream youth, and each year they go up in grade and age, it grows exponentially. And we're not looking at this thing to affect education or take care of, get jobs, line the jobs. But again, like I said in the beginning, we're always talking about, when we talk about education in schools, we're talking about pipeline to prison, to pipeline to college, and pipeline to jobs. And I think we're doing our scholars a disservice by continuing this conversation and not switching the conversation. And I know those are the expectations, but we need to make a different reality. So with that said, there's so much going on. And I really, you know, Mad Dad kind of shocked me in a little bit, but then it didn't shock me. And it's terrible that these type things are going on, and we have 90 seconds, and these things are going on, and they're not being addressed by the broader community.
All right. All right, Ms. Allen, we encourage and welcome our audience to rejoin us next Saturday. And Mr. Allen, let Brother James Brown take us home with that excellent piece that he always sings.
Okay,
to
thanks for listening. Come on, James.